Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Tinfoil hat.
Oh, what the fuck are you guys even talking about?
Global controls will have to be imposed, and a world governing body will be created to enforce them.
Welcome to Tinfoil Hat. We go deep, homeboy. Eric, open your mic. Drink from the fountain of knowledge. There's lizard people everywhere. That's some interdimensional shit. Wake up, Aaron.
This is only the beginning.
Dude, you just blew my mind.
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
Revolution will be podcasted.
Yeah. What's up, everybody? How are you? Welcome back to another episode of Tinfoil Hat. You know who I am. You know what I'm here to do. As always, joining me, my partner in crime, XG in the place to be, Xavier Guerrero.
Oh, shit. Here we go again.
Boom. I'm going to say that every day
there
now.
There we go.
Guys, thank you all for coming out to the Huntington Beach, the Rec Room sold out show. Packed the house. Crushed that shit. And I love the crowds, man. You guys are the best crowds. You know what I love about Tinfoil Hat crowds is they don't have a certain type of comedy that they like. They just want good comedy. Meaning you could do a variety of different styles. They just want you to be really good. And I appreciate that.
And after the show, they always got more questions.
Yeah.
I love it. They're so into conspiracies. Like, yo, before you leave. And I'm like... I'm sitting there still smiling. I'm like, hell yeah. We always stay late.
I mean, it is a pretty amazing, the turnout. And again, all the ladies are smoke shows. Ooh. It's unbelievable. So tomorrow night, we have a big show. Comedy Cast will be live at the Comedy Star, brought to you by our good friends at abx.org. That's Absolute Extract. That's right, abx.org. They are the Reebok. They are the Nike. They are the Apple of weed. They are a $1 billion industry, and they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So go check it out. They got everything. They got weed water. They got weed stuff for your vajayjay ladies. They have anal bleaching. I mean, they got stuff for your dog. You can get your dog high now. It's like, what a wonderful time to be alive. And it should have been sooner. Don't know why it took this long. Support those who fight. Dude, these guys are fighting big pharmaceuticals. We talk about all the time at the Comedy Store. So go and just basically let them know that, you know, you appreciate what they're doing. We give out samples at the show. So come on down.
Also, it's not all THC. They got some CBD that doesn't get you high.
Doesn't get you high.
Yeah, if you got a job, you can't fuck up. They come through. They got just straight
CBD. That's why
CBD.
If you got a job, you should do mushrooms. Because it doesn't come up on a drug test.
Oh, shit.
Comes up as food poisoning. Just come in like, oh, I'm tripping balls. You know, so that, yeah. I mean, I love it, dude. I love it. Comedy Chaos has got, it's got Joey Diaz, Dane Cook, Bobby Lee, Ian Edwards. Christina Hutchinson, who's so funny from Guys We Fuck. So it's a wonderful show. Grab those tickets. It will sell out. And then Santa Cruz, Tinfoil Hats are coming. That's right, July 20th, we are live at the DNA Comedy Club. Grab your tickets now. Our shows are selling out. Grab your tickets now. Myself, XG, Eddie Bravo, we are there. We're bringing guns a-blazing, okay? I guarantee you, Eddie will get shit-faced and drop knowledge. Knowledge! That guy drops knowledge. Yes, we got those shirts are coming too, the woke boys. So go grab those tickets right now. I believe it's DNAComedyClub.com. I'll find look that up real quick. And then we are in Sacramento. What is that date?
That is the 2nd.
August 2nd?
August 2nd, yes.
August 2nd. We are in Sacramento at Harlow's, dude. This show will sell out, Sactown. I'm coming with Cowbell, okay? Cowbell, rednecks. You know what I'm saying? Children have the children of the corn shit. Okay. We're going to go hard in the paint where you read. I love Sacramento. It's one of the most underrated shows, underrated towns out there. So come out, myself, Eddie Bravo, and this fool once again.
And don't forget, you also got the Helium.
Yeah.
In St. Louis.
When's that?
The 9th and the 10th. They're coming up.
Oh, yeah. Man, I got to start pushing this
shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Heliums. Okay, I'll get that all out. We'll talk on the next one. What else do we got? I think we banged it all out, right?
That's it.
The Patreons, the t-shirts, go to tinfoilhatt-shirts.com. New shirts every month. And then go check out the Patreon. We're giving you 3 to 4. I basically put out now 3 different content on there all week. So go check it out. Support the show. Enough of me. This is a big moment in Tinfoil Hat history. We have a presidential candidate coming on. He's going hard in the paint. His ideas are amazing, and I'm all for anarchy, dude. You know what I'm saying? I say burn the whole fucking thing down. And he is here. He's basically running on that. He is running for the Libertarian nomination. This guy is a war hero. He fucking brings books to Baltimore, dog. I mean, like, you're bringing books to the wire. You know you ain't fucking around. He's on radio, author, you name it. This guy is going to be the future. Please welcome the future president of the United States, Adam Kokesh, everybody. How are you, bud?
Outstanding, Sam. Thank you so much for that intro. And I love talking to comedians because the only reason I got into politics in the first place was that I'm not funny enough to do stand-up. I really love I actually have a Sam Tripoli station on my Pandora.
Bam!
And I found you through Ari Shaffir. You came up on.
You have my vote. You have my vote. You got it. Done. You don't have to campaign anymore. You got my vote. It's done.
All right.
I love that you're doing this. When did you decide to run for president?
You know, it's funny. Before I answer that, I have to say every time I have to introduce myself, even as a presidential candidate, I throw up in my mouth a little bit. Because you really have to be some kind of psychopath to want to be president of the United States. And I really have to make this absolutely clear from the get-go that Adam Kokesh being president is not an option. It's true that I'm technically running for president, but it's much more accurate to say that I'm running to turn the federal election into a referendum on whether or not the federal government should be allowed to exist at all. And if I'm the president-elect, it's not that I'm going to become president. We're going to go in and sign one executive order that lays out the process of a orderly bankruptcy process for the federal government. And this came about, to answer your question, in 2012. I know you know Bilderberg and you're familiar you're familiar with Alex Jones' work there. In 2012, I went to go to cover it for Adam versus the Man. And I met Jason Burmes, the original Info Warrior, and we were debating freedom versus statism. And at some point he goes, oh, yeah, well, what would you do if you were president? And I go, well, what would I do if I were president? You know, I got over that moment pretty quickly and said, OK, well, if I'm seriously defending this worldview, you know, what would I do? You know, I'd quit, go home and get a real job. If I had the authority, if I was entrusted with this false authority, this power that shouldn't exist that one human being has over others. I've seen Lord of the Rings. You don't put the ring on, you throw it directly in the fire. And that's the basic concept of the campaign. And since 2012, people have been asking me serious questions about this one after another. And it never really, you know, formed as a serious idea until years later that this was possible. And I mean, I'm only doing this because nobody else is doing it. That if this is an idea whose time has come, it's time we find out. We don't need to be united under a government to be united in American values. It's kind of ridiculous in 2020 that we're not all thinking outside the box and capable of saying, you know what, maybe we'd be better off without this institution. Maybe we can redraw all these lines on the map to better suit our needs and not be bound by history.
Well, you know what, man? I think it's a very good idea. I say I'm all for anarchy. I'm all for burning everything down. We have a broken system in Washington. You know, it's like Every election, I really learn to appreciate women more because elections are basically what guys do, are the equivalent of what men do to get laid, okay? Like, we say whatever we have to say to get laid. Whatever we think she wants to hear to give us some love, we'll say it. I mean, we will sell them the stars and the moon if they'll let us give them a dick down, right? So this is the same thing that, and then we wonder why women go crazy and they just get so angry with us because we are, because we're savages, right? It's the same thing with elections. So you have these elections, these guys literally tell us what we want to hear. And as soon as they get elected, they have no plans of doing any of it. And It's gone too far. And what's really bad is that when I say, politicians are liars. There is a group of people who know politicians are liars, and they still get angry because you're calling their side a liar. These are people they've never met before. These are people they don't know anything really about other than what they've been sold, okay? And yet they get so angry. Like, my mother and my brother are mad at me because I flipped off George Bush Sr.'s statue at the Houston thing. This man has been involved in three of the worst things that ever happened in American history, which is...
Did you get mad at them for not doing it?
What's that?
You should have gotten mad at them for not doing it.
Yeah, oh, I did. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I do research, dude. George Bush is a fucking criminal. And like my mom's like, dude, this is a true story. I was talking about it on stage.
Yeah, I was
my
there.
Mom called me. She's like, you need to tell me when you're doing your conspiracy comedy, okay? Because the last show that I went to, I brought three FBI agents. I'm like, why are you bringing FBI to my show? Why? You know I'm a scumbag, Mom. I'm your son. I'm your ex-husband's child, okay? All my fucking hobbies are felonies. Why are you bringing the popo to my show? It doesn't make any sense. But you know they get mad at me, and they don't realize that guy was part of the JFK assassination. That guy was fucking part of the assassination attempt on Reagan, and he was flooding the market, flooding the ghettos with crack. Supposedly, the Bilderberg Group was having a meeting in New York on September 10th, the day before September 11th. So stop with that revisionist history.
It's not just him. It's his whole family.
The whole family. The daughters are hot. They got big tits and they're a little cross-eyed. But the rest of them are just garbage people, okay? Garbage people. So there's no, you know.
The cross-eyed part that keeps me away.
I don't know, dude. That gets my dick hard, dog. I don't know why. I just like cross-eyed chicks. If they got cross-eyed and big teeth, I'm excited. I don't know what it is. I saw that one time in Canada, and I got so excited. I'm like, oh my god, it's the unicorn, and she just ran off. And I'm just like, somewhere out there is my cross-eyed big teeth lady out there. I can't believe I'm talking like this to a presidential candidate. So the thing I like about you,
Sam, can I go back to something since you
Dude, whatever you want to talk.
Before we go forward, I think it's just a good background point to cover here because you mentioned anarchy a couple times, and there are a lot of people who sort of, if you take a broader view of anarchy simply by the definition of a world with no rulers, that's not a world of chaos. That's a world of peace and harmony, you know, and if you want to lump me in with that, it's certainly fair. Some people would describe me as an anarcho-capitalist, but I think what's more important as what describes my philosophical and ethical grounding is voluntarism. And that's just basically ethics, the ideal that human relationships should be voluntary, free of force, fraud, and coercion. And then you understand when you look at government, what is it? It's something that fundamentally violates individual rights, your right to self-ownership, that claims some ability to steal from you, to tax you, to claim some ownership, to take your freedom away. By the way, if you were living in L.A., a few less of your hobbies might be felonies, just saying.
Yeah,
but if you take that philosophical grounding, you stop, and this is an important shift that I'm proposing for the Libertarian Party, for the Libertarian movement, is to stop focusing on aesthetics and start really getting down to principle, focusing on ethics. And I'll just use one quick example of this. A lot of people think of libertarianism as pro-gun. And, you know, I feel like I'm pretty comfortable saying this because I went to jail for 4 months on civil disobedience for gun rights. So the libertarian position is much more pro-private property than it is pro-gun. You should have the right to defend yourself however you want on your property, absolutely no questions asked. But if I want to say on my property, no guns allowed, and you bring a gun on my property, then you're violating my rights.
I think that's, acceptable.
Right. So to apply this now to the extreme in the political, or I should say to apply this ethical concept a little more consistently in the political context, we go with localization. How do we take governments apart from the top down to get it to that local level where it's really more reflective of a community's needs and it's voluntary in the sense that anybody can opt out. You can start your own community. So I'll go to the extremes in the examples and say, you know, even though I'm somewhat Jewish and the rise of, you know, fringe white nationalism in the United States today is somewhat viscerally disturbing, I can still say if you and a bunch of people of the same race, you want to go have your ethno state over there and you do it on private property and you're not holding anybody hostage and you're not forcing on anybody else, I want you to have that right. And if you're a gun-grabbing socialist and you get a bunch of people together and you want to live in a commune and do whatever crazy stuff you want to do there, same thing applies. If you're doing it, you're bringing it together ethically, I want you to have that right. How do we get to that? Localization, cure for polarization, is when you force everybody into one big system. Now, if I meet you as a fellow American and you disagree with me on something, I have to see you as an enemy. But you might violate my freedom because we have a different aesthetic concept of what we want our communities to look like. So like a liberal meets a conservative on the street, you have to say, oh, well, I hope you don't get as many votes for your side as we get for my side. And it's this, like you said, this, you know, bullshit fighting. You know, put all D.C. out of work. It is.
It's crazy. I want to get into a little bit of liberalism. Libertarianism. You know, there's things that I'm very libertarian on. There are some things that I am socialist on, and some that drives people crazy. That drives people nuts. They're like, you gotta be one or the other. Blah 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 blah. You know, the problem that I have.
Nobody defines terms.
What's that?
Nobody stops and defines terms in these stupid debates. Like you were saying earlier about the left and right, it's always just the media saying, oh, yes, your worldview is good. Let me stroke your ego. You're correct. And giving people that comfort. And once you get past that bullshit, it's all gibberish.
Because I'm completely down with, like, me. I have the right to my land, my property, and I'm allowed to run that the way I want it. My problem is, it's like, when we start getting into deregulation, I want you to clarify this for me because I think I might have it wrong. You know, deregulations of a lot of stuff. I think there's common sense deregulations out there. Like when you want to build a deck on your patio, right? You shouldn't have to get 90 permits to do that. That is all bullshit. That is called a fee of entry. I think we could all agree that there should be some sort of elimination of fee of entry, which is something we see in the medical community where doctors try to become doc. They go through schooling and they're so in debt, they have to play ball with big pharmaceuticals who put them in these positions and they can't really do anything other than become drug dealers. And, you know, so I'm completely against that. I do wonder, it's like, where do we get how do we counter giant business? Like, that's a big problem right now. Whether you look at, when you talk socialism and libertarianism, you're talking like one payer healthcare. That seems to be the big thing. And the problem right now with the American healthcare system is it is a profit healthcare system. And the reason that is a problem is because it leads to basically us living unhealthy lives. When you go to Canada, right? I mean, they are visibly healthier. You just see their skin. And every time I say, I'm like, God damn, these girls got good looking skin. And it's because their health care is about minimalizing cost. We live in a when you have health care that's met on profit, it means it makes money off of sick people. We don't right. have we have to have something that, because right now our health care system does not counter big pharmaceuticals. Yeah, sure. We cannot argue. We get, you know, everybody wants to get excited about gay black guy Booker running, huh? You know, he voted against Americans being able to go to Canada to get cheaper drugs. You know, I mean, like, how do we counter that?
That's obvious bullshit to be nice about it, I guess. Yeah, no, so you packed a lot into that, and I definitely really powerfully agree with the problems that you're observing here. And one is the perversion of the medical industry, and one is corporatism and the rise of, and concentrated, you know, wealth and power that exists under the modern banking and corporate system in the United States. And so in libertarian, just ethical philosophy, if something is stolen, it should be returned. The victim should be made whole. And I think it's really important to identify that there is theft involved here, that it's not just the taxation that is theft, but when you use corporate policies to eliminate competition, to create the barriers to entry that favor existing large corporations who can hire the compliance teams of lawyers and accountants. And this is why the big corporations love regulation. And what they're doing is they're stealing freedom. They're stealing opportunity. They're stealing your right as a consumer, even, to have the range of choices that the market would support without that government interference that creates these monopolies and oligopolies in industry that's really destructive. And so part of the challenge here is when you say, well, all of this property has been stolen, how do we return it to its rightful owner? And it's almost impossible. And so in a sense, I want to say my priority is stop the stealing, stop the theft, stop the corporatism, the violent advantage that governments give to certain companies that are able to buy their favor. It's a kleptocracy. Face up to that, own that. And then when it comes to returning what's been stolen, I think there are two really important things. And one of them is cryptocurrency. And it's kind of like Fight Club, where, you know, we're going to erase the debt record. And it's not quite that dramatic. And you don't have to fight somebody, fortunately, for this to work. You just have to using cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, Dash, Smart Cash. There's so many others out there. Whatever fits your needs, whatever is appropriate. If you just want to get started, get into Bitcoin. And it's a way to take the power away from the existing monetary system, from the current banks. And that's huge. You do that. And that, you know, this is where like Facebook come in, and with Libra is such a threat right now. And you go,
oh,
holy crap.
Garbage, dude. It's garbage. I just don't think people are going to buy it, because the people into digital currency realize what that represents.
Yeah, but the people who aren't into digital currency are the ones that we have to worry about. The people who are waiting on the sidelines for it to be just a little bit easier. And that's what they're doing. They're making it just easy enough that you can, that it's at least as easy as your bank app on your phone. And right now, Bitcoin doesn't do that on its own. There's no wallet. And like, you know, I use the Bitcoin.com wallet, and you know, they've sponsored me in the past, but like it's a convenient wallet, but it still doesn't have all the features built into it that the modern banking system has that Americans expect just as bank customers at the point of retail. And so that's the danger, is that Libra with Facebook, with the, and really it's a break. I think it's still progress. You know, I don't look at it as like, oh my God, this is the end of the world. You know, going from the Federal Reserve based system to Bitcoin, oh, well, maybe we got to have an intermediary time of Libra before we really get free market money that takes away that unjust power. But, you know, like I said, I'm an optimist. I see the progress here. So anyway, the second thing is, you want to respond?
No, I know that there's going to be people who are on the sidelines that are into digital currency, and they see something, maybe Facebook's going to offer it. Like, oh, yeah, I'll buy it because it's a good investment. But, I mean, like, we see them putting out technology stuff all the time, and there's a rejection to it. You know, I mean, like, there's people with Apple Watches, but not nearly to the number that they thought it would be. I mean, people are like, why do I need an Apple Watch when I got this? It's not. I just think that Facebook is so entrenched. That's why it's still around. I don't think people trust Facebook anymore. I don't think people want anything to do to anything. And maybe I'm wrong. But then how do we counter that as a libertarian? How do you counter the power that is Facebook?
Yeah, I tried to get off Facebook myself. I was successfully disengaged from Facebook for about a year, and I got sucked back in. And, you know, I'd like to think I've got a pretty woke group of friends. I'd like to think that my audience is, you know, pretty well paying attention, and there are alternatives out there, but it's I want to say it's a first to market advantage, but it's not, because it was second after MySpace, of course. And there are a lot of interesting theories around that, that maybe there was someone else behind what was going on with Zuckerberg and Facebook CIA. Becoming the dominant social media network. I bet you've gotten all into that. But the other big thing that I think my campaign uniquely offers is that taking the federal government through a bankruptcy process means that we get to liquidate the assets of the federal government and return them to the American people through Social Security as a spun off public trust that would simply exist to disperse those funds until they're paid out. The debt that the federal government has on paper is not a legitimate debt. So we would be disowning that and writing that off in the bankruptcy process.
I couldn't agree more. I want to get into your service. You served in the military, and I really do respect that. I have this weird thing because I really respect military and people who serve, but I feel that we are using and abusing our servicemen and women. We're turning them into stormtroopers for bankers. If someone can tell me why we're in Afghanistan outside of putting military people there to guard the fucking poppy fields, give me a reason. Give me a reason.
Yeah. It's all okay. Money and power. It's all bullshit. Right. I'm a big fan of Smedley Butler, and it's funny. Smedley Butler is one of the most decorated Marines in military history, 2 medals of honor, multiple, silver stars, Navy crosses, bronze stars, was in the World War I, a bunch of banana wars. And they teach you about that in boot camp in the Marines. They still teach you about the legendary Smedley Butler, but they don't tell you that when he got out of the Marine Corps, he wrote a book called War is a Racket. And he described himself in it as a high class muscle man for big business. And what I think the evolution that I've gone through now is understanding what the founders advocated for when they said that they were against a standing army entirely. And this is a bit of a mind fuck for most people to really go, wow, hold on a second, let me think this through. Yeah. Having a military makes you less safe. The founders were right. And when I say that having a military makes you less safe, I don't just mean in the sense of blowback. You know, like when I was in Iraq, we made enemies faster than we could kill them. And it didn't take long to realize that the conflict was really designed that way, not to be won, of course, but to be perpetuated for the profiteers. And I'm glad there, Sam, that you didn't thank me for my service, because you know better than that. Because I would say, what? Serving bankers and politicians and war profiteers. And that's what I try to say to people whenever I get that opportunity to wake them up just a little bit. But the big lie that's behind militarism in the United States is something that we don't even question, because it's really ingrained from elementary school, even when we're taught what war is. And we're told that wars are fought between countries. As if it's America versus Japan versus Germany versus China versus Russia. And it's bullshit. It's absolute nonsense when you understand what government is as a violent racket. You go, wow. Because you have to separate this. And most Americans really have been fooled into conflating the concepts of country and government. We think of the government as the country. And it's even in the mainstream media all the time. They say, America did this, America did that. And it's like, no, that wasn't America. That was the leech on our ass known as the United States federal government.
Couldn't agree more, dude. Could not agree more. Could not agree more, man.
The big lie that is at the heart of militarism is that wars are fought between countries, when the truth is that wars are governments using violence to expand their protection racket and serve their sponsors one way or another. And there's no way around it. It has always been the case, poor men dying to line rich men's pocket. And when you realize that, you know, Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires. Why? The proof is like right here in modern history, right in front of us. How did we win the Revolutionary War? Now, again, this is the nationalism. Even, you know, even I'm susceptible. I think it's Doug Stanhope, you know, nationalism making you take pride in shit you never did and hate people who you've never met. It's like, even I want to say who won the Revolutionary War, because I like the nationalism, but only the good stuff that agrees with me and, you know, gives me a pat on the head and makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside, makes me feel good about being American. But there is something to be said for the wisdom of the founders on this point of not having standing armies. That the free market, the free society, the legitimate, efficient defense, and the only one for free people is a militia-based defense. Because when you tell your government, yes, we don't mind if you rule us, sure, go ahead, tax us, bend us over as often as you feel like it, we'll be good little subjects. That's the only reason another government wants to take you over, is so that they would govern you like you're being governed now. And in the United States, everybody's afraid of China taking over when you present this. And it's like, wait, you mean if China got rid of our government and had to start from scratch, I think we would be thanking them.
So I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you, man. There is this fucking conflating of that, you know, what the U.S. government does, we have to co-sign on. And that's total, complete bullshit, man. It's my argument for Israel. It's like, people want to go crazy on Israel. I know a lot of Israelis, dude. They ain't doing anything. They get propaganda fucking shoved down their throats that gets them to convince everybody around them fucking hates them. And now there is some fucking geopolitical shit going on, but they are the fucking victims of fucking propaganda that gets them to fucking have identity politics with these fucking lizards way up top, man, who are making the real deal. Like, I did not fucking illegally go into Iraq, okay? I did not. When I say that Israel was one of the people that were part of 9/11, I'm not saying Israelis were. I'm saying these dark arts, fucking Mossad, fucking lizard people. It's the same thing. It's the same thing as here, man. We're conflating. People are people, okay? And they just want to laugh and drink and get their dick wet and fucking and feed their family. That's what they fucking want, man. This conflating that, you know, you're either with us or against us bullshit that we do with this. Dude, we are in all these countries for no other reason than to steal their natural resources. If you are trying to convince me this is about freedom and safety, you're lying. You're lying, and you had your head up your ass for fucking 2 decades.
I love that message in your stand-up and how that really permeates in your understanding. I got to ask you a question. Are you a fan of the Bulworth theory?
What's the Bulworth theory?
I don't know if it's actually called that or if I just made that up. But do you know the movie Bulworth?
I do know the movie Bulworth. What's the theory?
We just all got to keep fucking each other till we're all the same color.
Boom. Dude, we all need to fuck until we all look Filipino. That's my opinion. We're all going to eventually look Filipino, knock the bottom out. He's halfway there, dude. This guy looks like he loves to sing karaoke songs in bands on naval bases. That's how I know he's Filipino.
I've never been called Filipino or anything.
You are. Trust me. You're Filipino. For the sake of this discussion. So we got this war thing going on. We what we've had... since, and this is questionable whether George Bush Jr. was even in the military. Nobody saw him there. You had Obama, no military service. And now we have Trump, no military service. Is it better to have a military person in there? Or is there some brainwashing going on that they think might is right? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, it depends. And there are a lot of different conflating factors. And I would say that there are a couple things that my military service is a testimony to that I don't mind being appreciated for, that I was willing to put my life on the line because I thought it was protecting people, that it was making the world a better place. And I joined before 9/11, and I joined before we were in a war that has now gone on almost two decades. So there's a certain factor where I think a lot of people like me have gotten out, and maybe the only people that there's a bias now of people who are still in the military one way or another in support of the global war on terror, just because it's been going on for so long. So, I was at the Idaho Republican State Central Committee meeting a couple weekends ago, and there was a resolution to support Donald Trump in his intention to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. And there were two National Guard commanders who got up and spoke against it. These are Republicans speaking out against policy proposed by the president to keep troops in Afghanistan longer. And I was shocked. You know, it was kind of a reality check for me, because I think a lot of people who have been in combat are propelled towards libertarianism because they go, where was the ethics lacking in this? And they seek that ethical message. So not necessarily. I mean, I think I don't think I offer, you know, any more truth, because I saw the horrors of war up close, and that motivated me a certain way and propelled me to find out certain truths for myself. I think what I offer as a candidate is someone, you know, should I be the Libertarian Party nominee, who can appeal to the people who would say, well, you're un-American, or you never saw shit, or, you know, no, I was in Fallujah in 2004. I saw Marines die. I saw Iraqis die. It was bullshit, and it took me a while to figure that out, but I figured it out. And the sooner the rest of the world figures it out, the better off we'll all be.
Yeah, I can't agree more. And the biggest thing that people need to understand is that when we see these defense budgets go up and up and up, very little of that actually goes to our sons and our daughters who are on the front line. Those go to fucking military contracts, dude. And they are just reaping fucking cash. And I don't know how they could spend all this fucking money, man. It's so much. They'll never spend it a million lifetimes. And they just keep, because they're psychopaths, man. They're psychopaths. And it's like, it's really sad that those two guys stood up, because you can actually go, dude, we have seen that dark forces are behind this global terrorism, okay? That, you know, over and over we find that the CIA funds a lot of these people we're fighting. Donald Trump selling those arms to Saudi. Guess where those arms are going? Two places. To fucking slaughter Yemen and continue the genocide. And the second one is to ISIS, who will be fighting our sons and daughters.
Yeah.
I mean, this is disgusting.
Sam, there's one idea, and Xavier, if you've never heard of this, this is so important, and this is really critical to my worldview and to how I have come to understand political progress in the sense towards more freedom and less war, more harmony, more cooperation, and globally. Professor Steven Pinker from Harvard did a great TED talk on this based on his book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, called The Surprising Decline in Violence. And what he has proven academically, irrefutably, and there are different theories about this, but what he has proven that really is irrefutable is that, at least in the categories that he's examining of human violence and conflict, violence is on the decline and follows a kind of radioactive decay curve throughout human history. we are living in the most peaceful times ever. You are less likely today than ever before to experience violence at the hands of another human being. And there are those who would dismiss this and say, well, look at how big government is. Look at how much it controls our lives. And well, a lot of libertarians and conservatives at least have this one thing genuinely in common, is that we make the mistake of assuming that big government is always worse than small government. And I had to figure this out for myself when I asked myself the question, well, how do we measure the evil of government? How bad is bad? And it actually was answered by this little thought experiment where I asked myself, well, would you rather live under a huge government that's half the population and dominates a huge sector of the economy, but is pretty nonviolent, respects individual rights, never starts wars, and exerts just enough coercion to have the business that it has a monopoly on? Or would you rather live under a government that's tiny, 1% of the population, but it murders every firstborn child? And you go, oh yeah, no shit. And it's that the evil of government is not measured by its size, but rather how much it violently takes us off our natural state of harmony. And in that sense, humanity is progressing. And I think it gets better every day.
I agree with that. I'm also going to say something, that government is not a thing. It is a paradigm, meaning there's no government. It's like if a government's in the building, right, the White House, if the government, but you burn down the White House, there's still government. It's not, it's a paradigm, dude.
Right.
And we talk about government like it's a thing. What it is we have corrupt individuals who are manipulating the paradigm, and they've created a system that is caused us to be fucking paying attention to shit over here, and now what's going on over here, and it's gotten so well done so well, but the problem is it's starting to fail because they're not smart people, they're very dumb. Psychopaths can't create; they're not creators. Okay, analytical people, they can create like software, but they can't create like fucking ideas. Do you understand what I'm saying? I that sounded really dumb right there, but that, like, these psychopaths, they can't create stuff that will get a new way of lying to us. So they keep running the same thing because they're not smart enough to mix it up. They're not smart.
Yeah,
they're psychopaths.
Yeah. This is why technology is such an important concept in this, is that I don't know that, I don't know if I go so far as to say that the psychopaths can't create or be creative, but or even that there are genius psychopaths that in a very competitive industry of political power who get up there, who are capable of great evil and achieving great organizational accomplishments like we see today. And I wouldn't underestimate them in that sense. But here's what's shifting, and it's the awareness of the internet. I mean, it's podcasts like this. It's the conversation that is made possible on the internet, and the fact that their kids, you think about the super class as a whole, like the Rockefellers, the Warbucks, you know, the several thousand, you know, most powerful families in the world, their kids are growing up with the same internet that we are. And the things that drive them to that evil, the ability of their parents to pass on that psychopathy, because even psychopathy is in a sense something that can be passed on behaviorally. And that effect is going away. The motivation for control and power and dominance, even that is going away, is humanity gets wealthier. And so that gives me a lot of hope. I think it's not that they're failing because they're not creating. It's just that people are waking up faster than they can keep us asleep.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you look at Bill Gates, he's been accused of stealing his operating system. Steve Jobs accused of stealing a bunch of ideas. Mark Zuckerberg accused of stealing his idea. I mean, we've seen at the highest levels that these people, that I just don't think they're creative, and that they're good enough to see a good idea, and they're good enough to see it through. That's my opinion. I want to talk to you about.
I don't mean to dismiss that. That's definitely a big part of it. And it's just that if you're those people are even there are a lot of people trying to be evil and smart and steal shit. But yeah, I think your distinction is important. That yeah, they're not the people who are they're bent on exploitation, not creation, providing value.
100% at the highest levels, they're old fucking idiot piece of shits, and they're not creative people. They're stuck in their old way, and they're the whole reason Hillary Clinton's emails got out is because she's an old bitch and she doesn't know how to use the internet, and she sent out dude, rule number one of the internet. Don't fucking email about crime. You know, it's like dumb fucks who like take pictures of themselves with all the money they robbed from a bank and put it on Facebook. It's like, you're dumb, dude. And like, she's just old. So they like emailed all this crime, and it's catching up because they're not smart. They can't like, dude, they pulled this shit on us to get us in Iraq, and now they think they can pull it again to get it into fucking Iran. And it's not going to happen. Who knows what's going to happen? I think we have taxation. Well, no.
So what it's what they can get away with gets smaller over time. We're going to lie them into World War One and World War Two. And I mean, you go back and read that history. If you think that those wars were just and legitimate on either side,
wars are false flagged, that most people don't want to fight. And it's just like these rich fucking assholes want to take all the money.
So, but Vietnam, scaled down. Gulf War, scaled down. Global War on Terror, scaled down. And it's harder to lie to us and get away with it. And what they can get away with is only on a much smaller scale. They can still have Donald Trump send, you know, Scud missiles or whatever they are all over the place that cost, you know, tens of millions of dollars each, whatever it is. It's just insane. But the idea of a force-on-force war where a bunch of people line up in the middle of a field where none of them live to kill each other because they're wearing different colors, sorry, not in the age of the internet.
Well, it used to be conquering. You used to conquer a whole fucking place, and that was yours. Now we just fight over and over.
No, because our government is hijacked by people who don't want an end. They want continuously buying their products.
Well, when I thought we went to Iraq, I literally thought, okay, we're going to get a new state out there. When I was a kid. When I was a kid, that's what I thought, because that's what wars were. Those were like, used to conquer this place. Used to
this
conquer
is our
this.
House. We're going to open some whorehouses, place to do drugs.
I literally thought
that
was what's going to happen. Nope. When I was a kid, I was like, we're going to war with Iraq? I was like, what? And like, fucking 9 or 8, I was like, holy shit, we're going to have a new state.
I mean, dude, we have bases.
And we've been there for 20
everywhere
years.
Everywhere now. The people who worked in the shadow government of our government to create this military-industrial product, they're doing it all now with China. You know, Israel, which is just the only reason. Israel, it's not about religion. They tell you it's about, so you fight over it. But it's about a land bridge. That allows the easiest way to get goods from Asia and Africa to Europe. And they're just locking it down. And that's, if it was about religion, why would they give China a giant port there? Because it's about business, dude. It's about business. And these lizard motherfuckers run this shit. But I want to get down to, I want to talk about crime, the other industrial complex that's destroying this country, which is like privatized prisons, ridiculous laws that are ran by rich people. Like, dude, I'm sorry. Drugs, prostitution should be legal. And I know some people have weird reactions to that. But it's like, you should not be going to jail for doing drugs, okay? If you steal to get drugs, that's a crime. That's called theft. If you do drugs yourself, that's to yourself, okay? There's no law against destroying your life. All right, because I would be a fucking 3-time felon. All right, there's no laws against that. All right, but let me tell you something. If you arrest me and you throw me in jail and you hit me with a felony, I can stop doing drugs. I can't stop being a felon, and that fucking makes my life 10 times worse.
Easily, you can't get a job.
It's so hard. Yeah. It's like, dude, I get it. I get drugs, man. We don't want to legalize heroin. We don't want to legalize meth. But guess what, man? We can figure out a way to decriminalize it so that people get hooked on it, don't end up paying a price longer, even if they get sober. It makes no sense. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, this is what you said. We don't want to legalize them. I do. And it's not because I want people to do them. I'm not pro drug or anti drug. I'm pro healthy, conscientious, enjoyable drug use for whatever does it for you. And if there's no victim, there's no crime. And it's the same thing with sex. You know, I'm pretty vanilla as far as things go, but I don't want any rules on you in your bedroom or who you're allowed to make love to or anything like that. And while it's sort of like, again, the aesthetics versus the ethics, like I don't want meth to be legal, but I don't want to use violence of the state against someone for using meth. That's insane. And I think just getting to that core ethical concept makes it a little easier to understand and to separate ourselves from the racket of government as a whole.
Okay. Outside of murder, outside of theft, okay, outside of violence, okay, a lot of things should be legal. And I know it sounds crazy, but it's like, dude, someone doing drugs, as much as you don't like that, it's not causing you any problems. Prostitution is a poor people crime because in LA, we see all these billboards for sugar dating. That is what rich girls do. Rich girls become sugar daters. Poor girls become streetwalkers. It's just a fact. Hey, listen, married men shouldn't be that. Then fine. And I know you're not going to agree with this, but make it a rule that married guys can't get hookers. Fine. Whatever it is. But, you know, having an affair is illegal.
Okay. You want to get in a marriage in government, man.
No one's going to get married if there's hookers.
I think that is a big fear that everything will become a transaction. But my point is that even if you don't like something, it doesn't mean it should be illegal. And the thought about paying for sex, it's like some guy who's older got cash in her pocket. This chick needs to pay rent. This guy needs to pay rent. Work it out, man. It's capitalism.
You say that shit. You say, what is it? You don't like abortions? Don't fucking get an abortion.
Yeah, that's my opinion because it's not going away. And all you're doing is pushing these people into dark alleys where it gets really unfucking safe. So what would you do with that? What would you do with all those crimes?
Well, Sam, this is where I got to be humble and say, you know, I'm not a central planner. I'm not going to answer all these questions and solve all of everybody's problems. What I'm pushing is the first step in localization, and dissolving the federal government sounds like a big deal. We're talking only about 3 million people out of 22 million who work for government at the state and local and federal level together. And a lot of those 3 million jobs that we're going to eliminate are going to be recreated at the state government, at least temporarily. I mean, we might be talking about getting rid of as few as 1 in 10 government jobs. It's not that much, but what it allows for in getting government down to the state level is a customization of your government experience. I mean, the ultimate goal is to get it down to the point where every individual on your private property, you have the right to opt out entirely. But like, say you really don't like drugs and you find a bunch of other people who don't like drugs and you want to have a community where drugs aren't allowed and you all voluntarily agree as each other's neighbors.
There's dry counties.
We're going to sign a contract. It's going to be a private agreement between us as neighbors. And we're going to call this a drug-free neighborhood. And if you violate that, you know, you get kicked out of the neighborhood or you pay a fine to the HOA something like that.
I'm totally fine with that. Yeah. I mean, there's dry counties where you can't drink alcohol. Alcohol's legal in this country.
Yeah. Don't like it. Don't hang out there.
Yeah. You don't like it. Don't. I mean, it doesn't go away. What if we outlawed once that went away? Nothing.
Right.
But we got to stop violence and theft, okay? Those are the things we got to stop because those hurt other people.
So this is, again, libertarianism really explains what you're talking about so well, very precisely, with this idea of self-ownership as the foundation of ethics. And this is sometimes described as natural law, right? So you own yourself. As an independent consciousness in your own body, that's an observation of reality. That's not just a construct. If ownership is that absolute inherent control, there's nothing that you own more than yourself. And this is why it's wrong to violate someone else's self-ownership. So it's wrong to interfere with you exercising your rights, your freedoms. It's wrong to assault you. It's wrong to hit you. Because you own your body, you also own the product of your labor. And this gets to the Lockean concept of property rights. If you mix your labor with natural resources, your labor is in it. And this is, there's some subjectivity here, right? Like I can put up a fence around 10 acres here in Arizona and say, this is my homestead. I own this. I'm working this. But I couldn't put up a fence around 1 million acres like, you know, a lot of corporations do in different circumstances and say, well, I own all this because I put up a fence around it. But if you have property that you've acquired legitimately through developing natural resources on your own or through trade, you sold your labor or you bought something or bartered for something, then you own that as much as an extension of yourself as anything. And so it's just as wrong to violate that. And this is where you go, well, hey, if there's not a victim, there's no crime. If I don't hurt anybody, if I'm using my own property in a way that no one else is affected, and you come and interfere with my ability to do that, then you're the criminal. We live under a criminal government.
Dude, I agree with it, man. I totally 100% agree with it. Now, I've seen you've been arrested a couple times for weed, for social disobedience.
Dancing.
How'd you get arrested for dancing?
Oh, man. How far back does this go? So this was 2011 when this happened with me. Man, a long time ago before that. There was a flash mob. And by the way, I think it's deliciously ironic that flash mobs were a relatively fleeting social phenomena. But there was a flash mob proposed by a group of libertarians to celebrate Thomas Jefferson's birthday, where they went out at midnight, headphones in, we're going to dance, we're going to do a little thing, say happy birthday, Thomas Jefferson, and then we're going to leave. And as they were doing this, one of the United States Park Police came up to them and said, you guys have to leave. You're not allowed to do this here without a permit. And they started walking out. And the last girl in line in this group, she's like dancing as she's walking out of there, you know? And the guy grabs her and goes, no, you're under arrest.
What a piece of shit.
And everybody's like, yeah, well, your tax dollars at work, America.
Would you get rid of go on, sorry.
Yeah, no, freedom of expression. And at the Jefferson Monument, of all places, that great champion of free speech. And so this went actually to appeal. And it was, I think it was a district court judge upheld the original decision charging her with a federal violation. And it wasn't even a misdemeanor. It was like a code violation. For dancing in a restricted area because it was not appropriately reverent enough. As in, you must bow down at the gods of government, even though it's Thomas Jefferson, the one who said, bow down to nobody. And so a couple friends of mine, Eddie Free and Jared Denman, put together the dance party at TJ's protest. We went back. And we danced, and this was the video that went super viral in 2011 of me getting choke slammed by a cop. I was picked up from behind in a bear hug and then like thrown kind of over his hip. And as I was in midair, he grabbed me by the neck and slammed me on this marble floor. And if I hadn't been a Marine Corps rugby player, like knew to tuck the chin and slap the ground and how to take a fall like that, you know, he would have whipped my head back and cracked it open on the marble there. And he put his knee in my ribs, and you can see in the video, like, his knee goes, I mean, you go, holy crap. I was like, I didn't realize that was happening. I didn't know ribs were that flexible. Because it looks like his knee goes, all the way to my spine. It's pretty intense.
It's unbelievable, dude.
But I was just bruised up. It wasn't bad, you know. Nothing worse than a rugby game, for sure.
You know, my grandfather was a cop. My cousin's a cop. I have I have a soft spot for cops. But I do know that when they come to crack down on disobedience, it's the cops that they send. And these cops crack skulls for a paycheck. They hit their brothers, their sisters, their fucking fellow countrymen. Crack their fucking skulls.
You got to stop flipping off people now, since you can't be dancing.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. It's stupid. Guy's dancing, she's dancing. I mean, get a fucking life. Get a life.
Well, I was afraid for a second that you were going to say your wife was a cop, too. That would have been Nah, dude,
I couldn't do that. I'm too much of a fucking crazy person. But, it's just disgusting. Would you get rid of the rule that you can't fire a federal employee?
Oh, well, I wouldn't have to get rid of the rule because I'm going to fire all of the federal employees.
Boom. As soon as I said, stupid.
Well, one of the mechanisms of this that I think is really cool is that on day one, we declare that the federal government is of no authority, that it is in bankruptcy now. It is a custodial institution. I resign from the presidency to become custodian of the federal government with the fiduciary responsibilities of a bankruptcy agent. But from day one, federal laws are unenforceable.
I love it, dude.
And by the way, the thing about the Jefferson Dance Party, I've done a lot of civil disobedience. But this was really the most successful in terms of changing policy. And I didn't know until after this happened, but Thomas Jefferson was actually known as the dancing president. Like, he would bust out his fiddle at the White House and has all these great quotes about how good dancing is for young people, just to lay on the irony. But we actually beat the charges in court just by standing up and being a pain in the butt for half a day.
Unbelievable.
And we got the policy changed. You can now go back, and it's totally symbolic. I don't care. I'm involved in and I actually have some pending legal cases that I can't comment on right now, where I'm working on stuff that's of actual like legal precedent significance. But there was a certain beauty in the simple elegance of this that we won. And if you go back to the Jefferson Monument today, you will not be arrested for dancing. They know better now.
You've had a successful radio show. You are on RT America. What's your thoughts on RT?
I think it's the Russian government poking the American government in the eye. And I was grateful to be a part of that finger for a short period of time. But you are becoming a finger of the Russian government when you work for RT. And that's probably why I only lasted 4 months there. I had a deal with them where I had absolute editorial control over my show, and they genuinely respected that. There's only one caveat, that they have the chyrons, the titling on the bottom of the screen. And when I interviewed Ron Paul, I wanted it to say future president of the United States of America. And they said, no, you can't do that. You can only do serious titles on the titles because it's, you know, credibility of the network. But I was critical of Putin in a deliberate way to be sort of balanced. And I think it was more that at some point they realized, wait a second, this guy is not just against the American government. He's against the concept of government. Because as we know, it's a government is an institution of violent control. There's no way around that.
It's all about control. Tell us about your book, Freedom.
Since I now don't have to do the shameless plug at the end, I appreciate that. I started writing this book when I was in jail after the shotgun incident in 2013.
What happened with the shotgun incident?
I recorded a video of myself loading a shotgun in the ironically named Freedom Plaza, two blocks away from the White House. And it was 20 seconds of glory, and it was enough to get my home raided, my door beat down, a flashbang grenade thrown at my dog, and two helicopters over my house. Ultimately, they sent more men after me than they sent after Bin Laden. Yeah.
Oh my God.
They were of a much lower caliber in a number of ways, and they were more interested probably in justifying their budget than anything. And I do find it particularly embarrassing that of all the federal agencies, for me to be in kind of a spat with or to have a rivalry with, I get the United States Park Police, the drag of the federal law enforcement barrel, the FBI Academy dropouts. And I wonder if they're going to hear this, but I don't particularly care. There are plenty of good people who work in the park police, but there are a lot of bad ones who do, crowd control and protester control and stuff like that around the Capitol. So I was in jail for 4 months, and people sent me all these great books about libertarianism and ethics and philosophy. and economics, and I realized that that there had been a transformation that I went through. I was a libertarian when I enlisted in the Marine Corps, but I didn't know what it meant. I was a libertarian by default. Like, I'm not going to be a Republican or Democrat. That's totally fucking lame. Sign me up. What are my options, teacher? You know, and it was like, oh, you can be a libertarian. They like to be left alone. So I was like, yeah, you know, punk kid, sign me up for that. And it wasn't until even, you know, I got back from Iraq and some years had passed that I was really fully propelled by that experience to get to the bottom of the rabbit hole on this understanding of freedom as an ethical principle rather than a political aesthetic or even a political message. So what I saw was that all these books that people had sent me, I read a lot of them already, and so I was, you know, giving them out to other inmates, which was a lot of fun. But what I realized was that there was an opportunity to be the very best ripoff artist in the freedom movement and take all of the best ideas out of these books and all of the best features and qualities of these books, all of their strengths, none of their weaknesses, and combine them into one ultimate book that would be short and easy to understand and the quickest way to convert people to this worldview. And if I may just say one thing about that, you know, I used to use this flat earth analogy before flat earthers became a thing again, and they kind of ruined it for me. But basically, people used to think the earth was flat in the center of the universe. And then someone came along and said, no, maybe it's round and it's not the center of the universe. And they had done all of this complicated math and made all of these equations to justify the crazy observed orbits of planetary bodies in the flat earth model. And then someone said, no, look, it's round. It's not the center of the universe. And look, all of the math gets so much simpler. Everything makes sense. It's really easy now. And still people had to go over the equation again and again and again and go, well, yeah, in order to displace this way more complex model that they had put all this thought into and justification into. And that's really where we are with statism and government today. And that, you know, especially even someone like you got a lot of family members who are cops, you know, you'd probably have a whole other set of thoughts and feelings around these issues. If say you had a family member who was killed as a cop by, you know, who's doing the right thing as a cop, because, you know, it does happen. And similarly, all of us who haven't at least achieved this level of awareness, and I was really bad, you know, hoorah Marine Corps, I put my life on the line for the system, it better be fucking righteous. And it took me 10 years to displace that model. And so I wrote the book Freedom to be the most efficient way for people to go, okay, yeah, we don't have to keep making excuses for government. It really is fundamentally unethical from the ground up.
Well, man, this has been a wonderful episode. I do love cops. I do find it hilarious, though, that these people on the left want to take away guns and give them to cops when 2 years ago they were crying about cops shooting everybody. And it's like, oh, well, you want to give them the guns? You were just telling me how dangerous cops are. Now you're telling me they're the only ones who should have guns? It's a crazy, crazy thing, dude. It's a crazy thing. Yeah. And I love what you do, man. You got my vote, dude. I wasn't even going to vote, but now I'm going to vote. And you got my vote, dude. I'm going to come vote.
Well, thank you, brother.
Who's the vice president pick going to be, dude? Who are you going to go with, man?
Well, there are a few that have been floated, and I don't want to name any names at this point because there are actually a couple of people like in serious running right now. But there are a lot of great options for people.
Kanye
to be
West,
the last that you'll never need.
Kanye West, dude, you want to win? Kanye West, you Kanye, 2020. Say, call it, burn everything down.
If he's on board with the platform, he's in the running for sure. But I just want to say that the Libertarian primary is not determined by any government-held elections or votes. It's all determined by people who show up to the National Convention as delegates. And it's embarrassingly easy. to be a delegate to the Libertarian National Convention. And so if you want to be a part of this, please sign up. It takes a little bit more than just saying, hey, you know, we'll vote in the general if you get the nomination. We really do need to make sure that this is the future for the Libertarian movement and the party, and that Americans have a real choice besides, you know, asshole A or asshole B in 2020, and say, look, no, there's a real alternative. We can get rid of all the assholes and shut down Washington once and for all. So let me say, man, I'm grateful for this this opportunity. Every time you talk, I'm like, I know that voice. I know that voice. I hear that voice while I'm driving, and I love it. If people can remember how to spell my funny last name, it's Kokeshthepresident.com. K-O-K-E-S-H, but it's easier to find me through my main website, thefreedomline.com. My book is free in every digital format possible there, including audiobook. Oh, thank you. You can get it also on Amazon. We made it about as cheap as possible there. And I really appreciate everybody who's always supported my activism and made it possible for me to do this. I'm doing Adam versus the Man now, putting out videos 5 days a week. And getting back into the swing of things with that, it's been for me now. Let's see, it was November 30, 2006. I got out of the Marine Corps. March 19, 2007 was my start with Iraq Veterans Against the War. It's been a little over 12 years now of full time activism, and you know I've put everything I can into this. I've been arrested more times than I can count. I've been broke more times than I can count. I've caught Greyhound buses way more times than I want to count, getting from place to place, but it's all been worth it to make it happen, to be a part of this. And I've spent a lot of time in my activism as an independent journalist. And if there's anybody who's still listening to my voice all the way into this podcast, share this show, support independent media, support this podcast, support the people who are getting the message out that you believe in. Put your money where your ears are, at least, because we don't qualify for government-approved corporate sponsorship, to put it mildly. So,
you're a G, thanks for my that. Friend. Thank you so much. Again, dude, you came, you saw, you kicked a whole lot of ass. Adam Kokesh, you're a G. I appreciate you coming on. Go to his website. Adam Kokesh, was it Kokesh? Kokeshforpresident.com.
No, thefreedomline.com.
No, this is Kokesh.
Thefreedomline.com.
Okay,
thefreedomline.com is the easier one to remember.
Thefreedomline.com. Okay, you're a G, dude. I appreciate you. If you're ever in LA, let me know. Love to meet
face. Oh, dude, I really want to see one of your shows. I'm only 6 hours from LA. I really don't have an excuse.
Come and hang out. I want to hang out with a presidential nominee. I want to come hang.
All right.
Be safe. You're the best. Good luck. Anything I can do to help, please let me know. And we'll do it again soon. You guys rock. XG, you're great.
Thank you.
Aaron, shh. Bye, guys. You're the best.
Thanks. Sorry. Go home.